if you could refocus the church right now with a wave of your fairy arm, what would you be doing differently? I mean, if you could just change it in the ways that you think inside, I wish that was different, or that doesn't connect with me. But if you could wave your fairy arm, what would you do differently in the church today?
It's funny. I had a conversation with a really close friend who's a senior pastor of a church in Indiana just yesterday. And he was talking about, you know, hiring this new pastor. His church is about 500 people total. So it's, you know, it's a decent sized church. And in his town, it's actually maybe the biggest or one of the biggest churches. And so he's very successful in the eyes of the, you know, kind of the church world as a young pastor. But he was kind of stressing out a little bit about hiring a new youth pastor and whether he should hire a full-time or part-time or, you know, whatever. And that he was right at that awkward place where he has one assistant pastor himself and a part-time worship leader and administrator. And that, but for 500 people, can you really afford to hire a full-time youth pastor? I mean, you know the deal. I mean, very practical conversation. And I just said, oh, that's easy. You should shrink your church. Just make your church smaller, then you won't need to hire him. And then there's like this pause that he kind of laughed a little bit. And then I could tell I wasn't like, I didn't laugh back. And he goes, well, now, Carl, that's kind of silly. I said, no. Who told you your church should be bigger? I mean, actually, where did you read that, by the way, that your church should be bigger so that you could have more tithes? Because that's really why you need your church to be bigger, is you have more tithers so that you could hire. I mean, nobody would say that, and hopefully that's not the ultimate goal. You want more people to know Jesus. I get that. But on the pragmatic business side of church, you know, you want your church to be big enough so you can hire the pastors you need and have enough tithe to pay their, you know, to pay their salaries. So I just said, maybe, I mean, Jesus had 12. Maybe it grew to 120 or 500. You know, I mean, he talked to thousands, probably tens and tens of thousands of people, but it seemed like maybe 500-ish really believed by the time he ascended. And that was Jesus himself. And so I said, dude, you have as many people in your church as Jesus had in his. I mean, you're obviously doing really well. I think you probably need to shrink it. So I would say it's not about the size, shrink or small, big or little. It really is about, do you have a handful of completely sold out people who will follow Jesus anywhere he tells them to go? Period. And if you have three of those in the same church, whether the church is 200 people or 2,000 people, if there are three people in that church or 10 people in that church, that would be like crazy. But I've never seen a church with 10 people like that in the church. But let's just say there's 10 or 12, like, you know, Jesus had 12. It would change the whole vibe of the church. It would complete, because everybody knows. I mean, if you're the guy out there, and especially if you're the leader, of the church or a leader in the church, if you are actually doing what Jesus did and following Jesus in your own life and really just going for it, rather than answering emails, doing administration, having conversations, giving interviews on podcasts, things that Jesus didn't do, if you were actually doing what Jesus did, you would be shocked, actually, at how much your church changes. The whole thing changes. So I think that's what the church needs. Youth leaders, anybody. It needs a handful of people who go all in for following Jesus, and then the whole culture of the church will change. And it might get bigger, but actually very likely it might get smaller. But that's not the point, and that doesn't matter.
It's so ironic.
That's my answer.
Yeah, that's good. And it's so ironic that that people who are passionate about following Jesus and out of that are passionate about church growth are following a person who is the worst church growth person on the face of the earth. So he goes, eat my body and drink my blood 9 times in a row, and he loses his whole congregation.
Right. And he turns the ones that are still left, and he says, you guys want to leave too?
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't explain himself. What the heck? I mean, when people misunderstand me, I back up, restart, and explain myself. Why do I do that? Because I'm insecure. I don't want you to misunderstand me. I want you to fully understand me because I'm insecure. But Jesus was never insecure. So he honestly, in that sense of the word, didn't care. He honestly didn't care because he was Jesus. I mean, that's, you know, and we're not Jesus and we'll never be Jesus. But I think the closer we get to him, the more secure we feel. My closest friend in all this is Bart Tarman, who helped me start the Simple Jesus Gathering. And Bart leads a little church in Santa Barbara. And it's packed. It's a little old wooden church right on the beach. And it has 120 people if you pack them in tight. And so I always say to Bart, why don't you, you should do two services. right now he just does one on Sunday morning, or three. You could do a, you could fill up a Sunday morning twice and Saturday night, maybe Sunday night, maybe four. Then you could have like 500 people. And then he always says to me, why? Well, so you'd have more people. Yeah, but why? Why would I do that? Well, that more people would know Jesus. I think that's supposed to be the answer, right? And yeah. He goes, why? So we think of more people coming to my church, more people will know Jesus. Is that what you're saying? And then I get confused. I think I'm the one that's supposed to do this to other people. How come you're doing this to me? You know. And he just keeps saying, why? Why would he? Why does he want more people? He doesn't even get it. And he's being partly sarcastic, but he's actually being, he strategically decided to not add services and to limit who comes to 120. And I just think that's, he calls his church the slowest growing micro church in America. and he's very proud of it. You know?
That's good.
And it's awesome. It is
that's
awesome,
good.
Believe me.
Let me ask you one last question here. I know, because I know you a little, you have some very, you know, Jesus-focused, world-changer types of kids yourself. What have you seen now that they're getting older that has really helped them to develop in who they've become today? I mean, so many parents want their kids to grow into adults who really love and follow Jesus themselves, but they just feel so frustrated and confused and, you know, and they look for formulas for this to happen, and the formulas don't work. And here you are, and your kids are of a certain age now, and I wonder, as you reflect on their own trajectory, what do you see that has been most helpful in them developing into who they've become today?
Well, you know, my wife, Chris, always hates it when anybody asks us their parenting questions. She always says to me, Carl, don't answer, don't answer. We don't know the answer to that. You know, but she's not here right now, so I'll tell you. You know, yeah, we do have three great kids. They're 25, 24, and 22. And all doing great in life and following Jesus kind of full steam. And the oldest lives in Beirut, Lebanon, and doing some really cool stuff there. And so that is actually true. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if there are, you know, I don't know if there are secrets to be shared that, you know, that because we did this, that happened. I would just say this. I would say that in general, young people have a BSO-meter. You know, they can see if somebody's not telling the truth. And, you know, a hypocrite or lying or making stuff up. So we've been far from perfect parents. And yet, if you ever ask our kids at any point in our kids' lives, do your mom and dad fully believe in Jesus? And are they fully committed to making the decisions in their lives based around what he would want? All three of our kids would have just been like, well, yeah, obviously. I mean, so they've always known that, and they've always seen that. And we've made lots of mistakes. I've been too busy. I've been busy in the name of Jesus and ignored my kids, which is the worst kind of busyness. We've done all kinds of things that are wrong, you know. So, like, we're the worst ever at having, like, some families have, you know, family devotions. I think we've had family devotions two times in our lives, and both times went really poorly. And then we both said, both times we promised we would never do that again. So we don't. We don't do family devotions. We don't memorize scriptures as a family. We don't post scriptures on our refrigerator, like all kinds of things that Christian families are supposed to do. We don't do any of that. We never force our kids to go to church. They go when they want. Now, surprise, surprise, they actually want to go when it's their own choice, but we never forced it. So we did lots of things that are probably counterintuitive that I'm not sure are right. But if you just asked our kids, were mom and dad all in with this Jesus thing, they would have never doubted that. And I think that is by far. I mean, you could say have fun with your family. You could say spend time. There's lots of great things to say, and I think those things are true. But I think by far and away, if you want your kids to grow up in a godly way and to actually follow Jesus themselves, you have to model it. That's what I just said about leaders in the church. If you want people in your church to actually radically follow Jesus, you, as the leader, have to radically follow Jesus. And Jesus didn't sit around doing administration, and he didn't sit around just raising up other leaders by having them read books and meeting with them once a week on Tuesday morning. He actually did it. He did the stuff first that he was asking them to do. So if we as parents do the stuff that we're asking our kids hopefully to do in following Jesus later first, our kids will end up doing that as well. I actually think that's the secret to all leadership, whether with your kids or with friends, your neighbors, missionally in church, is you the leader, and all of us are leaders in some way, actually follow Jesus yourself 100% as much as you can, admitting your failures when you fail, which we do all the time, laughing about it, making a joke, don't take yourself too seriously, get back up again, and dive back in. And if people see you doing that, kids or people around you, they will do the same.